Okay. So, ladies and gentlemen and perverts, please sit down. It is a great pleasure for me being able to introduce you, or most of you actually will know him, I guess, but it's a very special moment for me. We have our second speaker is Are You Serious, who was one of the founders of, or actually the founder of Mondo 2000, one of two founders, and back in the 1980s. And I have to say, like, there are like three or four people on this planet who are responsible for me starting Monochrome in 1993, and he's one of them. So I have not told him yet, but in fact, it is true. Okay, so it's actually cool being able to work with him here at Ars Electronica, and I'm really looking forward to his speech. He will be talking about the singularity and about sex without meat. So a big applause for Are You Serious?
Thank you. I actually labeled this talk Sex Without Meat, How Singularitarians Think About Sex. I should have called it How Singularitarians Think About Sex After the Singularity. As far as I can tell, they think about it now pretty much the same as most other people do. Maybe they're spending a little bit less frequently. They're worrying about whether the robots are going to get smarter than them. So they're busy making sure that their level of intelligence is high. Right now, the Singularity 2009 conference is going on at this very minute in New York City. And have people here been to Singularity conferences? All Singularity virgins, just one or two non-conference virgins. A quick scan of the lectures at the Singularity Conference, as in previous years, finds no mention of sex, eroticism, play, fun, feeling good, pleasure. There is one lecture that includes humor and creativity in the title, so that's a development. There's some hope there. Actually, last year at the Singularity Conference, the only person I ever saw get booed at a Singularity conference, it was only a small portion of the audience, but he did get booed, was a guy talking about the future of robotics who suggested that people might not, that we might not want to force people to work for money in the future, and that they might be able to enjoy leisure and play. And there was a little bit of a round of disgust there. At this idea, and I don't mean to taint the entire singularitarian community. They write my checks, among other things, and a lot of good, interesting people. I am not fundamentally a believer in this idea, which I'm sure everybody here is familiar with by now, the core singularitarian idea, the technological singularity that machines, artificial intelligence, will become more intelligent than human beings sometime in this century. And after that happens, they'll be so intelligent that they will be able to boost their own intelligence in this sort of quantum, very rapid way. And very soon after that, you enter into this almost magical space where everything becomes unpredictable and anything might happen. So thank you. So in some sense, I'm looking at this as a non-believer. As with God, I don't believe in not God, but I definitely don't believe in God. Perhaps there will be a singularity. I think it's there's some possibility there. I come to this in a sense as an anthropologist. And rather than being largely a technological exploration, this is in some ways a psychological exploration, because I will be reading to you to start responses to a question. Where I ask people, you know, what will sex be like basically after the singularity? Part of it is published here in this fine print edition of H Plus magazine, which during the second half, I'll take some questions, and I guess I'll give away free magazines to anybody who speaks up. So there's some motivation there. So, yeah, for starters, I'm really just going to give you a dramatic reading of some of these responses. I did want to say, I had an interesting conversation with somebody a few years ago on the way to a transhumanist meetup down in the South Bay. And it was sort of a revelation to me because he was the first person in these circles who told me that he really didn't like sex and that he found it an annoyance. He thought it was a distraction. He thought it was sort of a really low level, as I said, a distraction. I found that very honest. It seems obvious to me that one possible outcome of the singularity would be that people will be divorced from the urges that the sexual urges, basically primitive sexual urges. But I never heard anybody say that out loud, and he's the only one person who I've ever actually heard say that out loud. And I think to me it's interesting because in the 1960s and 70s, for some of us, we had this idea, very naive idea, that basically war was made by alienated old men who were not in touch with their bodies, not in touch with their singularities. And if you could have good sex and dance to rock and roll, then you weren't going to become a warmonger. Now, obviously, we got Ted Nugent or Kid Rock or any number of examples that shows that the situation is much more complex, and that indeed perhaps asexual humanity will be a nonviolent humanity. It may all have something to do with the limbic system. So I organized this opinion poll for the current issue of H Plus magazine. And as I wrote in the introduction, we asked several leading thinkers in the radical tech community the following question: is there sex in the post-human or singularitarian future? And for starters, nobody blatantly renounced sex as a low-level animalistic bore. But I would start by sharing some comments that align somewhat with that view. So theme one, the end of sex, or the de-emphasis of sex. Quote from Natasha Vita Moore. She is really one of the founders of transhumanism as an activist identity back in the 1980s. The Extropians, a group some may fondly remember. And she opens her response in the magazine with this: will there be sex in a post-human future? Yes, it will not look, sound, or even feel like the traditional act of rubbing membranes against each other. The aesthetic of post-human sex takes a giant leap into uncharted territory. If the post-human is semi-biological, then the physiology of sex will remain the same sexy, smelly, wet sex that we so dearly love, but with added twists in virtuality and stimulations. But what happens when our human genitalia is gone? What will we rub instead? And the answer is coming later in under a different theme. Michael Anisimov, someone who is deeply involved in the Singularity Summit, one of our regular contributors at H+, writes a popular blog called Accelerating Future. This is pretty interesting. Sex is quite a simple act itself, much simpler cognitively than me writing this paragraph. Sex has existed for hundreds of millions of years, but general intelligence has only existed for a few hundred thousand. Sure, sex activates higher cognitive functions, but that is a credit to those functions, not sex itself. It is important to remember that sexual intercourse is a highly ancient, simplistic at its core activity that we may choose to discard at some point in the future in favor of some complex activities that generate even more pleasure and connection between people. When we choose to call it sex, whether we choose to call it sex will be entirely arbitrary, but it may bear little resemblance to the sex of today. So to paraphrase Cole Porter's, birds do it, bees do it, therefore really it's not very interesting. Again, from the magazine article of Ben Gertzel, CEO of AI companies Novamente and Biomind, and he's our AI columnist, and a leading figure in singularitarian circles, is even more explicit about the end of sex as we know it. And he says the experience of gaining pleasure via, in some sense, merging with another being, that will probably survive the singularity, but will likely be customizable into various forms, which may end up bearing little resemblance to sex as we know it today. Okay, then we have Athena Andriadis. And she's a biologist who is very critical of the singularity and also some of the more utopian predictions in transhumanist circles. And she is quoted in the magazine taking the view that singularitarians must be control freaks and therefore must be alienated from sex. And so this is her quote. "Jacking off while jacked in, cryonics, robotics, uploading, singularity by AI, the concepts speak for themselves, no eros, only thanatos. At best, endless and simulated yet, masturbation in VR Lotus Land. Besides, if you're obsessed with control over all your functions, how are you going to let go enough to have an orgasm?" Now, mentioning here of simulated masturbation in VR Lotus Land reminds me of the thought that this talk is really a talk about people's fantasies about a fantasy, and it mostly involves fantasies. So it's an interesting triple layer of the fantastic, and what can be imagined. So theme number two, the end of sex for procreation, which was a theme that people commented on. This is, of course, pretty old news, but it was treated as an important theme to mention when discussing the evolution towards sex. Now, somebody else had suggested to me that I should make this talk about the evolution of sex through technology, getting away from the sort of pure primitive body-to-body sex and the development of sex toys and movement through various virtual forms of sexuality, from pornography to virtual sex and so forth. And you can imagine that I did that for yourself, because I think everybody pretty much knows about that. But Karen Elliott, who responded to the question, and she's part of the H Magazine Facebook contributors group. She says the end of sex is the engine of evolution. We're fast approaching a point in time where we'll have control over our evolutionary futures. Sex will no longer be the ipso facto engine of evolutionary change. This has huge implications for how we as a society operate. Also, think about the consequences of deliberately gaming sexual selection mechanics. Think of the pickup artist community, spearheaded by evolutionary theorists like Eric von Markovic, the subject of the book The Game by Neil Strauss. There's a community of men, parentheses, and women, close parentheses, so that's interesting, who are studying the psychology and sociology to better understand how to seduce people, what happens when attraction becomes science. So we're still in the realm of evolutionary process there. Theme three, simulation, sub-theme, multiple selves. Okay, so the maestro, Ray Kurzweil, says this: we will continue to have bodies in the singularitarian future, except that they won't be limited to just one. We'll have different virtual bodies in different virtual reality worlds and morphable nanobot swarms for real worlds. A couple could become each other in a virtual reality environment and experience a relationship from the other's perspective. We'll be limited only by our imaginations. That will be true in general for virtual reality, which is where we will ultimately spend most of our time. Also in the magazine, Natisha Vada Moore, again, exosex, sex with outside the biological body, will be simulated in virtuality, much like Second Life or Skype, and other digital forms where sex is enhanced, extended, digitized, and synthetic. It will be more real than real, a hyper-real experience. Endosex, sex within body or form, would exist even if the post-human is so-called disembodied, or better, a distributed collection of selves, multi-selves, coexisting on multiple platforms, including biological personas, virtual avatar personas, or other types of forms in different substrates and platforms. Extropia da Silva, also in the magazine. Polyamorism will be the norm. After all, if, quote, I, unquote, have uploaded, duplicated myself, and exist as self-similar copies in cyberspace, coexistent with real space, where does the self end and the other begin? Relationships will be tried out in simulation, combining variations of each self, weeding out combinations that do not optimize cooperation and mutual gain. Selective memory editing may be used to erase memories of suboptimal relationships, leading to love affairs that are always subjectively ideal. It is interesting to note that humans rather enjoy romantic period dramas. For instance, Jane Austen's books concerning the trials and travails of love in upper-class society remain as popular in the 21st century as they were when first published in the early 1800s. If posthumans inherit their predecessors' love of historical romances, they might simulate the relationships of ancestors of the dim and distant past. In fact, given the vast computational resources that Moravec, Seth Lloyd, and Nick Bostrom have appealed to, it is perhaps astronomically more likely that if you are in a romantic relationship right now, it is one being simulated by godlike intelligences rather than being real in a physical sense. Now, are people here generally familiar with this theory that has been propounded by Nick Bostrom, that was covered in the New York Times and so forth? And basically, I mean, if you take virtual life or you take Second Life or something along those lines, and you throw it ahead 100 years into the future, then you imagine that you might be able to populate that world with you might be able to create within that world a universe as rich and complex as the universe that we're in, and populate it with beings as complex as we are, and that they would be convinced that they're having a real experience. So we are, therefore, there's a very good chance that we are, in fact, already in a second life or any multiple of that. And, you know, some sweaty guy, you know, 16-year-old is, you know, this is his world, or her. Theme number four. Theme number four, and this is a good one, I think: intensification, pleasure amplification, and issues around pleasure. Alex Lightman, who is the new executive director of the organization H+, which actually is not directly related to the magazine H+, which is a whole interesting story, but won't go into that. Hang on a second here. He's very excitable, and so I should give this a dramatic reading. The primary purpose of the singularity will be seen after the fact to be awesome sex. There will be exponentially more sex, with exponentially more interfaces, and with exponentially more measures of pleasure. measures of pleasure. First, whole brain emulation, a more stealthy way of to say uploading, will enable us to make almost perfect replicas of our brains, which can then imagine, aided by the clouds that put thousands of supercomputer equivalents at our beck and call, to generate millions of sexual fantasies and to engage in variations of them. There will be no limit to the number of our own brain replicas we can create, host, and send off to have great sexual adventures and imagination, and then bring the best of back for reintegration. Second, we'll be installing bioports into our body, a la The Matrix or Sleep Dealer, each of which can stimulate our nervous system. In heterosex, men penetrate women, but with this, men and women will interpenetrate each other multiply, and, as with USB 2.0 daisy chaining, so will men, women, and androids be able to multiply interpenetrate locally or remotely. Back to Natasha Vidamore. Sex is all about nerves, and the human brain is the pleasure center. Nerves will be replaced with synthetic fibers or electrical charges that continue to detect and transmit nerve-like sensations. The post-human's post-neurobiological brain would experience a series of sudden spasms, contractions, and surges, a sense of pleasure and release. For the most part, we could be rubbing neurons. That one's pretty psychedelic to me, actually. I've been there. If we are distributed multi-selves coexisting in different platforms, a sexual experience could be a community event or a selection process to determine how many selves would be involved. The entire field of post-human sex could give new meaning to sex freedom and gender differentiality, where a person could have different scenarios depending on what form or type he, she is in. Human form, membrane wet sex, semi-human form, neurological ecstasy, post-human form, multiple exchanges of digitized codes reaching a crescendo. But sex is not just about the crescendo. The physical and or electrical charges brought about by excitation could be relocated to different parts of the brain. In a bio body, instead of reaching climax, a person could have that energy charge redistributed to the memory center of the brain for deeper focus. Likewise, a non-bio body could use the energized charge for a totally different activity. Okay, continuing on the same theme of amplified pleasure, respondent Michael Ames, who is from the H+ Contributors Facebook group, raises the theme of controlling and amplifying pleasures automatically. And the previous speaker was talking about the fact that we're able to trigger push-button orgasms in the laboratory now with 90% accuracy. So he writes, pre-singularity, my view of sex is genetically programmed drive impulse act that I cannot ignore, change, adjust the volume of. So it should be incredibly annoying, but mostly isn't because it's so much fun. Post-singularity will be way more fun because I get to twiddle the knobs at will, knobs labeled volume, gender, stamina, love, etc. Now back to Michael Anisimov in the magazine where he gets onto a similar theme. The connection between certain activities and the sensation of pleasure lies entirely in our cognitive architecture, which we will eventually manipulate at will. It's probably less complex than we think. Many drugs can already stimulate the pleasure center, and there are many simpler, these are much simpler than brain-to-computer interfaces. With sufficient ability to intervene in my own neurology, I could make any experience in the world highly pleasurable or highly displeasurable. I could make sex suck and staring at paint drying the greatest thing ever. It's always paint drying. It scares some people to think that the connection between pleasure and experience is entirely arbitrary and not based on some deeper philosophical meaning, but too bad. We will likely choose to preserve sex as a highly pleasurable activity, but perhaps other people will decide to elevate philosophical discovery or artistic creativity to a higher pleasure level than sex. That's entirely their decision. All right, move on to theme number 5. Borgian sex, come together, brain links. Back to Extropia da Silva, who is actually a virtual person in Second Life. A committed relationship would be to accept a complete merging of two selves. Two loves would be expressed by transferring the two uploads into a single higher capacity brain, quote brain, such as the sentient internet itself, in which both minds run simultaneously. Such twindividuals, sorry, that's what it says, might merge with others, resulting in an expanding hive mind. Parts of the brain could be distributed over large distances, though if communication delays cannot be overcome, that would impose a limit on how far the society of selves can expand and still be all dash one. Possibly group minds that expand far enough to experience significant communication delays will fragment. Then, as well as others initially seeded from other twin individuals might expand until they are bound on every side by neighboring group minds. Moravec has speculated that competition for space, matter, and ideas might result in what Charles Strauss calls vile offspring. That's his term for posthumans that have diverged from the human species to the extent that nothing recognizably human remains of them. Devouring the physical substrate of neighboring group minds, quote, space, energy, material, and useful thoughts reorganized to serve another's goals. Ray Kurzweil, on this theme, repeating from earlier, said a couple could become each other in a virtual reality environment and experience their relationship from the other's perspective. Alex Lightman, from the H+ organization again, one of the most profound pleasures of sex, in my experience, is what I call the empathy hall of mirrors. That is, to be able to not only see what you are, to not only feel what you are feeling, but also feel what your lover is feeling, almost as deeply as she is. If she is also an empath, then you can get a positive feedback loop of sensation. After the singularity, most transhumanists who choose to stay embodied will present as empathetic metamorphs, possibly surrounded by utility fog that enables us to become anyone or anything, seemingly anywhere, and with telepathy common to be able to transform ourselves into our lover's heart's desire at a moment's notice. A member of the H+ contributors group and writer for Wired, who shall remain unnamed, wrote, imagine a future where direct brain-to-brain hookup is a common part of sex. Will a brain-to-brain during sex reveal to you that your wife has been fantasizing about Brad Pitt for all these years? Or Homer Simpson? Or her father? Or your father? Will you want to know that? And do you dare to let her know what is going through your mind during sex? I wonder if direct brain-to-brain hookups are going to be a huge generation gap when it comes to sex. No matter how open to new experiences you are, as you age, your brain becomes less and less plastic. We hope you also become somewhat more wise, or at least more mature. How will that work when you're in your 40s and want to jack into your favorite 19-year-old? Speaking for myself, I might physically desire a 19-year-old, but I'm already at the point where a conversation with most 19-year-olds is more effort than it is worth. I can practically assure you that I don't want to see what is going on inside a 19-year-old's head. Well, most people want to visit the cacophony of the teen brain when they're just trying to get their rocks off. Darren Reynolds from the H+ Facebook user group is suggesting here, you could connect your neurons to mine and we become a single conscious entity. That's closer to the ideal of holy union than anything current organisms achieve. Perhaps eventually we will leave these human bodies to travel through space. I need an echo there. Travel through space. Perhaps clouds of dust, intelligent and conscious on a scale beyond human imagination, would encounter each other as they expand through the universe. At first, low bandwidths are used to explore each other, with the rate of information exchange growing to a climactic explosion until the beings effectively become one. Ultimately, we all end up the same conscious entity, using all energy and materials in the universe to maximize the amount of consciousness. I see that as the inevitable outcome of life. Whatever laughable messing about we humans do in our silly parliaments. I need to do that again. Whatever laughable messing about we humans do in our silly parliaments. So you got to love the little Zarkovian flair there at the end. Natasha Vita Moore again. Sex is a means of communication. In post-human futures, connectivity is paramount. All the connectivity from simulated environments to the new sphere could end up being one very big bang. For contrast, here's an extreme case of autoeroticism from CJ Carr from the H Plus Facebook group. I think it'd be interesting to be able to have sex with yourself. You could do it in virtual reality, controlling two bodies at once. It wouldn't be difficult if you did some sort of mirror image movement thing. Seems like it would work, but you could definitely take it way beyond that. Okay, theme six, and the last theme before I take questions and enter into discussion with all of you. The cosmic imaginative. Adam James Davis from Facebook Contributors Group. A concept I like to call cosmodildonics, a la the mechanical vibration of an electronic dildo. Erotic stimulation from any and or all repetitive and periodic phenomena in the universe, from electromagnetic waves to the orbit of planets, from the oscillations of civilizations rising and falling to the potential Big Bang, Big Crunch, Big Bang, etc. patterns of whole universes. I've garnered euphoric and intense experiences through the contemplation of seemingly inescapable thought loops, contradictions, and paradoxes. They have built up and built up. I believe this could be a system for post-human erotica, or the feeding of information into a closed system, preventing such information's escape, building up until the closed system explodes, orgasm, but with abstracts and concepts. The conceptual, abstract equivalent of this idea, to program oneself to oscillate rapidly between extremes at the end of philosophical and ideological spectra. Sounds like my Facebook page. A la the peaks and troughs of mechanical vibrations of mechanical dildos. And then there's Dadaist transhumanism. To take the Dadaist surrealist principle, everything is erotic, everywhere is erotic to a literal extreme through technology. To program oneself in order for everything and everywhere to induce erotic stimulation and orgasm, including the thought of deactivating such programming to get on with life. The antithesis would be nothing is erotic, nowhere is erotic, which would be like most tech conferences. Post-humanity, in infinite members of infinite genders in an infinite orgy, and eternal mega scale ejaculations, orgasm through supernovae, a car crash is erotic, colliding celestial bodies are more erotic. So we need to bring Ballard back to cover that eventuality. David J. Lewis from H Plus Facebook, I predict we as human beings will realize our symbiotic nature and proceed to create new forms of symbiosis with the animal kingdom. Sex will ultimately become not merely a state of mind, but mind itself. How will those in the generations leading up to the singularity view sex? a libidinal adventure that turns us from mere desiring machines to active participants in an erotic paradise that is closer to the visions of the ancient Greeks than in our current industrial images of decay. A world in which it will be possible to engage any of the goddesses as Pan, or to seek pleasure as a plant might experience the honeybee. A nano foreskin could literally filter out the HIV virus and overnight turn our planet from one in which there is a plague to one in which sex is something we do for pleasure, not simply out of necessity. And final thoughts, questions of gender. And transgenderism and the acceptance of the idea of mutability of gender is widespread in the transhumanist communities and in singularitarian communities. And I didn't get a lot on this in the way of explicit responses to this question. One respondent did suggest that I explore the seasonal sex changes in Ursula Le Guin's The Left Hand of Darkness, which I read too long ago to remember. There is a great tendency within those communities to look at multiple genderism and also an idea called post-genderism. And I'll close from a quote from a different article in The Current Age Plus. It's by Ross Cavini. And the article is Transgender, Transhuman, Transbeeman, Uploading with Martine Rothblatt. And Martine Rothblatt, among other things, sent up the communication satellite that started the Sirius communications network and many other interesting things. And both the author and the subject of this article are male to female transgender sex change. Roz asked Martine, some in transhumanist circles have suggested that the future is post-gender. Should the future be discussed in terms of transgender or post-gender or both? And Rothblatt responded, I think the future should be discussed in terms of transgender, not post-gender, because we are not abandoning gender. Indeed, gender is one of the coolest avenues for human expression. Transgendered people have too much gender for the sexual dimorphic paradigm of male or female. In the future, everyone will explore the countless gender possibilities along the male-female continuum. So that's it for the reading part of this. I hope I didn't bore you by reading too much.
Oh, no. Not at all. Thanks a lot. Okay, so big applause for Are You Serious? Okay. So, okay, the singularity. I mean, the interesting thing is I'm kind of trying to grasp the singularity and transhumanism, but the problem is I was raised a Catholic. I can't even like imagine trans-Catholicism. So, but I try to. Okay, so my question would be, my first question is, isn't the singularity, because there are a couple of tweets where I'm trying to summarize a couple of the tweets out there, yeah? Somewhere, oh, those singularitarians, they're all cultists, okay? So isn't this like, isn't it almost like a theological concept of like trying to transform ourselves into this like mind situation, like, and like leave our bodies behind? It's almost like a medieval kind of thing of like, oh, this like filthy flesh and stuff like that, we should just like ascend to God.
I was thinking, I mean, in terms of imagining sex after the singularity, one of the comments I was thinking of, you know, try to imagine sex in heaven. And I think in some ways, many of these people have been doing is articulating a sort of a nerd's version of heaven, and then imagining what the sex, what sensuality and what orgasm and what all those things would be like in a heavenly situation. Now, I think that the singularitarians themselves are not cult members in the sense that, I mean, there's massive disagreements about all kinds of things within the singularitarian community and within groups. There's different politics, there's different huge philosophical divergences, there's different ideas about how and when the singularity will occur and what it will be like. So, I mean, it doesn't have that cult-like aspect, except to the extent that, you know, the people share the belief that, in terms of the technological singularity, that the AIs will become more intelligent than we are, and that as a result of that, many extraordinary and in some ways unpredictable things will happen. So, I mean, the qualities of a cult, you know, all groups have certain qualities of a cult, and they all share certain, you know, jokes or whatever that would be meaningless to people outside the group. Oh my God, I miss the singularity. Our H plus T-shirt, which we're very happy with because it can be worn either sincerely or ironically. So I invite people to get their own.
Okay. Yeah. Welcome to postmodernism, I guess. Okay. So there's one question here. I mean, maybe I'll try to reach you with the cable. Okay. Maybe we should try at least to use the microphone. Okay. Yeah, it's working.
I mean, so the people you interviewed had a lot of kind of interesting fire out there ideas, but isn't the most likely prediction, I mean, based on how popular sort of classic sex has remained for thousands and thousands of years, like isn't sort of the most likely prediction that even if you opened up the opportunities for all these other different types of sex, that most people would still choose to have kind of old school sex? I mean, that seems to be what people have done since...
Forever. Since like bacteria like invented the whole crap, yeah. So I mean, yeah, like pretty much like Sylvester Stallone in Demolition Man, where he doesn't like the cyber fucking thing, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I one of the great possibilities with the, you know, rapid evolution of technology and with robotics and the potentials of nanotechnology as a production technology is that it will free people up to have a great deal of leisure time and to be playful and to enjoy themselves, and that people may well choose sort of in line with the modern primitive concept as talked about by somebody like Terence McKenna or something like that. They may choose, in fact, to be dancing bodies, you know, naked on a hillside, as he said, wearing your penis sheath. But in the meantime, all of the information in the human system is in some kind of a digitized, accessible implant behind your eye that you can move into and out of it at any point. So I think people who are into this tend to idealize the best of both worlds. Most of them, so that you'll have the primitive form of sex, and you'll have the more abstracted forms of sex. But I mean, I do think that you know, through pornography, through all kinds of forms of virtualized sex, lots of people have become much more voyeuristic, I think, probably in you know, our time. Throughout the 20th century in our time than they were in the past. So in some sense, when we're having sex, we're not having the same sex that people were having in farms or before agriculture. We're having sex also with a series of images that are running through our heads that come from advertising and television and pornography and film and all these, you know, expressions of mimetic expressions of other human beings. So in some sense, even when we're having physical sex, it's partially divorced from those sexual origins for most of us. For I would say that, yes.
Okay. So Anna Lee, I tried to reach you. I think the cable is long enough. I think.
Yeah, almost.
I mean, we're talking about a singularity, and we have like cables here. I mean,
I know, where's my microphone implant? It was interesting of the people that you interviewed. A lot of them talked about kind of the disgusting messiness of sex and like all that spoo and goo and everything. But and then there was this fantasy, as you pointed out, of sort of consciousness replacing that, and so we'd have like twin individuals and you know, consciousness merging type sex, which to me also sounds really messy and kind of gross. Like when you said twin individual, I was like, oh, and I had the same thought that that contributor had about like, I don't want to know what's going on inside, you know, other people's heads when I'm fucking them. And so I'm wondering how the singularitarians deal with that idea of like the messiness of consciousness as we merge minds, or as we fantasize about merging minds. Is there any thought about like that might actually be just as messy and gross as like spooge and bodily fluids of other sorts?
I do think there are some people who talk about that, and they tend to be somewhat less optimistic about how quickly we can make copies of the human brain, and you know, have them available, for instance, for downloading, or all those various singularitarian fantasies. You know, if you look at the brain as this very complex and messy situation, and you actually think about how messy the content of the human brain is, rather than how much bod there is and how easy it might be to construct that, then yes, you're going to get hung up, you know, from their point of view, perhaps, on how messy all that stuff is. But if you're accepting it as a technological challenge, then you just sort of accept the fact that the human mind and human imagination has all this messiness in it, and because you're so relentlessly upbeat, you assume that it will be a good time, I guess, you know, that we will cope with it. We'll, in fact, you know, it will be less boring than you know, just watching a director's movie of what's the terrors that are going on inside of his or her minds today.
Okay. So let's try. Yeah, please. Okay.
I'm going to plead guilty to being one of the people who tweeted that it sounded kind of cult-like. But it seems to me that there is something fundamentally reactionary to the ideas of singularitarianism, in that, as he mentioned before, he tied it into the old Catholic ideals, and intellectual pretensions aside, it seems to simply be a modernistic articulation of old-fashioned dualism, that, you know, yourself is this abstract mind riding in a machine of meat. And that, I think, has been responsible for a great deal of the anti-sex bias and puritanism in our culture. Because our bodies are sort of fundamentally seen as flawed and impure, whereas with more rationalistic scientific viewpoint, I see myself, my identity, as being a physical one. My brain, my body are me. They cannot be separated. So I'm a little bit concerned about the implications of trying to define the self in that dualistic fashion. Could you address that a little bit?
Okay. Yeah, well, like I say, I mean, I'm not part of this alleged cult. I really dislike, I mean, as a concept, I dislike the idea of singularity, because, you know, I'm all about multiplicity and plurality and having as much choice as possible. And I think that the singularity in some sense is presented as something that we won't have a choice about, that it will, you know, it will suck us up in some sense into this other space of personhood, and it offered itself up as actually allowing us to have multiple identities, allowing us to explore identity, allowing us to have a much more expansive view of identity. But I mean, I share your concern that it seems to dictate something else. I don't know if that was
responsible. Yeah, it's almost like the Facebook version of God. Like, so it's you have like, you can have like whatever you do whatever you like, but in Facebook. Yeah, yeah. So, come here, please.
So the first thing is that obviously the singularitarians are all a cult. It's just the rap critiques. But that doesn't mean it's wrong. So.
Oh, are you a cultist?
No, because you said at the beginning, and this is interesting, the anti-joy, anti-pleasure, anti-enjoyment faction. And that's sort of scary. And then the number of people you had who had really, frankly, unimaginative views of how we will have sex when we can't have sex. I assume, but do you have experience with like a sort of fundamental droll Protestantism in these people, a sort of just a dour anti-human thing that just feels boring?
Like capitalism, that's what they came up with, the stupid Protestants. So, yeah.
I think there's two answers to that question. And one, I think, you know, you can't completely generalize about 100% of the people. So there are some very sexy people within the singularitarian world, particularly the younger ones. Yeah, I mean, I think certainly one aspect of nerddom in general, a certain percentage of nerds in general don't like the messiness of life and the digitization of worlds and being able to move into virtual worlds and game worlds and stuff gives you a world that is not messy. Or is not as messy and is one that you can have some control over. So I think that then there's an unconscious or perhaps a conscious tendency there. And the other thing is that if you go to a singularitarian conference, most of the people who speak there are active in AI, or they're active in some scientific or technological activity. And they're very paranoid about legitimacy. So, I mean, I felt very fortunate that Ray Kurzweil would even talk about sex. I don't know if, I guess he does, somewhat, and the singularity is near. But, I mean, these people are very, very cautious, and not so much. So part of it isn't coming from them. Part of it is coming from the outside culture, that they think if they talk about sex and pleasure and that we might liberate people from having to work all the time, this would cause kind of a crisis at large within the culture, that it would cause a backlash. So there's a mix. There's a mix of those things. Now, I thought one of the things, the question before that, in terms of humans being able to have a self and being able to explore a self within the singularity as compared to now, implicit in the negativity about what happens after the singularity is the idea that we're having a pretty good time right now. We're able to hold on to cohesive, comprehensible, or meaningful and chaotic selves right now. So, I mean, I think that the people who embrace this idea of singularitarianism would argue that whether you're stuck within the singularity or you're stuck within the biological world that has been made for us, you're still stuck with constraints and you're still struggling with questions about the self, and that you will just have more opportunities to explore and create interesting cells within the dollhouse of the singularity, just to pitch my magazine again, as you know, as within the biological so-called meat world that we're in now.
I'm sorry, I think we have to go on. We are a little bit late in time. A big applause for Are You Serious? Okay. So, and, yes, of course, yeah. Okay, yeah, magazines. Okay, we have a couple of minutes, like 4 or 5 minutes of break right now, and our next speaker will be Douglas Spink, the Uncrossed Boundary, Science Fiction and Cross-Species Sexuality. So don't run away, just like 2 or 3 minutes of break to set up all the technical stuff, and then let's go on.